As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hi, everybody. We have a very special guest, Kristen, with us. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
Yay, we're so happy to have you. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. If you enjoy hearing Kristen's story tonight, which I know you will, please consider applying for the Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program. We're really excited to start with Kristen's story tonight. Kristen is a marketing professional and a pageant title holder from Florida. She was diagnosed with narcolepsy at the age of 35 after 25 plus years of misdiagnosis. As a speaker with Project Sleep's Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program, Kristen shares her story with others to build awareness and to help others find a quicker path to diagnosis. So please take it away, Kristen.
Yay, thank you, Julie. So hi, everyone. I went through the Rising Voices Narcolepsy program in 2019, and it's made such a huge positive impact on my ability to share my story. So life before narcolepsy, we're going to start in on things. I grew up in Maine in a really small coastal town, and even from a very young age, I always knew that, you know, I definitely loved Maine, but I knew there was this bigger world out there, and I knew that in order to experience life fully, I needed to challenge myself and do everything to be able to live life to my fullest. So there's a series of things that this has really manifested in over the course of my life. And one of these things is getting into wrestling in middle school. At the time, I was on the all-girls team playing soccer when I was starting to foul out of games and get a lot of yellow cards. And our middle school principal basically redirected me from soccer, saying that maybe I needed a slightly more aggressive outlet onto, at the time, the all-guys wrestling team. This was in the 90s. There were not many female wrestlers, especially in the state of Maine. So this was something that was a little bit even more of a challenge because people didn't really expect that. And, you know, there were a lot of limitations and things to hurdles to jump over to do really well in the sport. So I continued on. I fell in love with it, continued on into high school. My coach still says that he thinks I'm the first girl in the U.S. to win on a co-ed team for regional. So that was super exciting. Definitely got a little bit more press and attention than I wanted at the time. I just, you know, fell in love with the sport and wanted to challenge myself. But this is just, you know, one thing that kind of encapsulates that I'm always, always trying to push myself and learn new things and grow as a person. And actually, kind of where this manifests now in my life is getting into pageantry, which I'll get into later. So, you know, my whole life, all through primary school, middle school, high school, all on up, I was super active with all kinds of different things. I was active in theater. I did arts classes. I played sports. I was a super active kid. But sleepiness was always something that was an underlying issue this whole time around. Like, I was always the kid that would fall asleep in car rides. I'd be the first kid at sleepovers or slumber parties to fall asleep. But it just seemed like it was like a normal thing. So the first time it ever got mentioned that I was falling asleep on a regular basis was in fourth grade. And it got brought up at school at a parent-teacher conference that I was falling asleep in class. Often the same type of things, like, you know, they dim the lights for presentations or be watching a movie in class and I'd fall asleep. Or if anyone remember, I don't know if they even do this anymore, sustained silent reading and you had to sit at your desk quietly for a half hour and read. Those were all prime instances when I'd start to fall asleep in class. So at parent-teacher conferences, when this got brought up to my parents, it wasn't, you know, investigated really further at that point because my middle brother, Scott, is pretty low functioning on the autism spectrum. And we had a lot of nighttime disturbances growing up. He had a lot of temper tantrums. He didn't sleep through the night very well. So things were definitely not exactly restful growing up, especially at that time frame. So the fact that I was having this persistent sleepiness wasn't something that was thought of, that, you know, there could be anything going on more than the fact that I just had a lot going on at home. So, you know, over time, I still stayed super active, you know, growing up in lots of activities. By the time I got to college, I was getting straight A's. I was a class president. I was definitely, you know, the geek that wanted to be involved in student government. Just absolutely everything I could be involved with meant a ton to me. And I was pretty hard on myself, pushing myself. I just felt everything seemed to come so much easier to my classmates. You know, I didn't want to hold myself back. So I still kept on pushing myself and pushing myself and pushing myself to get involved in everything and really excel. But at the same time, I still had that like dragged down feeling. I felt like, you know, everything just took me longer than it did everybody else. And I didn't really understand it, but I just took it at face value because I thought this is just how it was being in college. That's what it was, just being someone who was naturally busy. So it, you know, once again, didn't really get into things further than that. It never really got brought up in a big way. So I, you know, moving on into graduating from college and starting my professional life, I'm still being really hard on myself. I was super active with things, doing a lot of volunteer work. I did a lot of with Girl Scouts and stuff like that. And I soon realized that I wanted my career to take off in an even bigger way. So I enrolled in an MBA program. So I was working full time and I was going to MBA classes online part time. And, you know, it was hugely impactful for me, but that was also such a struggle to be able to, you know, read everything and take it in at the end of the day when I'm doing my studies. And it was just so much harder for me. I'd be so tired from, at that time, I was flying around the country all the time for work. My ability to retain all of the information and do my schoolwork was becoming more and more difficult, but I just buckled down. I just forced myself to push through it and didn't give myself a lot of grace and leeway along the way. But it was at the time that I finished my MBA that I was actually working at the same school as the alumni director. So they asked me to be a speaker at graduation, which is what the picture is of me at the podium. And at the time, I was being asked more and more and more to do public speaking. Being the alumni director, there were a lot of events, there were reunions, alumni weekends, things like that. But this was definitely by far and away the biggest audience I ever spoke to. I actually had a death grip on the podium. I don't know, half the time I felt like I was going to pass out. Felt like I was literally shaking, standing up at the podium. And I decided at that moment I needed to make a change and do something to get more confident to be able to be up in front of people. Even doing something like this right now and talking on video, it's nothing I would have done at the time. So I tried desperately to figure out what a best course of action would be. And I tried Toastmasters, failed miserably at that. I tried a couple different places. I was too embarrassed to go back to any of the places I had previously been. So I pretty much did the entire Southern New Hampshire circle and circuit of Toastmasters. But what really actually tipped me over into finding my confidence in speaking and ultimately what brought me into raising awareness for narcolepsy, funny enough, is getting into pageantry. So there was a girlfriend of mine who also worked at the college who was big into pageantry, and she thought that that would be a way for me to, you know, build a confidence in getting up in front of people, building stage presence, being able to talk in front of a crowd, because you really have to in pageants. You have to speak to the judges. You have, you're asked on stage questions in front of judges and an audience and your fellow pageant sisters. You have to like get up, and there's all kinds of different areas of competition, like, you know, in gown, and you have to be able to walk gracefully across the stage in front of everyone and not flinch under pressure. So, you know, getting into this, it helps me really develop my confidence. But it's as I was going into my first national pageant, American Woman of Service, that I realized I was pushing myself a little too hard in it. And sleepiness and tiredness really kind of affected my ability to perform well during the weekend. So basically with pageants, they're hectic. They're a blast, but they're very hectic. Early mornings, everything from hair and makeup to all kinds of different practice sessions for the different levels of competition. And then you actually have the different parts of the competition. So for that first national pageant, you know, fast forward through the entire weekend, I was feeling confident, feeling really good. We get to the onstage questions, the very last stage of competition, where the judges asked me a question about my brother's autism and what I thought about, I can't remember the specifics now, but something about particular programming for people with autism. And at that point, I pushed myself so hard that weekend, not had any breaks. The sleepiness just kind of felt crushing at that point. I had brain fog. I didn't feel like I can pull a real cohesive answer out at that moment between that like lack of cognitive ability at the moment and then the added pressure of being on stage during competition. I didn't feel like I articulated an answer very well. And I was very frustrated with myself after the fact. I was very proud. I still walked away with the national ambassador title for all of the volunteer service and work I had done over the previous year. And I'm super grateful for that. But I just knew at that point that I could have done better. And I was frustrated because I felt like something was going on and there had to be a reason why I couldn't articulate things the way I wanted to. And there, you know, I got tongue-tied at times, and this seemed to be a trend that it kind of really hit me over the head that weekend. So this kind of put me on the road towards diagnosis. You know, for at that point, it really had been years, I'd say from early to mid-20s, I had always mentioned to doctors different visits, and I had gone to several medical doctors over the course of several years trying to get answers. I'd mentioned that I was sleepy. I'd mentioned that I was tired, that I often had muscle aches and pains, that I had this brain fog issue, that, you know, by late afternoon, it could be really difficult for me to do some of the basic things I could do the rest of the day. And I got a lot of, okay, you know, you're fine, you're young, you're just doing too much. You know, you're tired because you're depressed. Like, I got the same answers on repeat over and over and over. And I just somehow I knew that that wasn't the full story. I knew that something else was going on. And it felt like this had all been going on for so long that I knew I really needed to seek answers. So I sought out a naturopath, and she's the first person that really sat down and listened to the full spectrum of my story and tried to understand what was going on with me. And she's the first person that ever suggested that I might have a sleep condition. And she started me on this path towards meeting with a sleep doctor, which, yeah, actually right out of the gate, my very first sleep doctor appointment, she suggested narcolepsy as being something that could be possibly going on with me and recommended that I do an overnight sleep study, which ultimately, you know, I was diagnosed with narcolepsy without cataplexy just a few short weeks later. A year later for American Woman of Service, when I went to give up my title, it's so fun to be able to go back and kind of like you're handing on the crown to the next generation of title holders. So it was great being able to honor the next ambassador the following year. So that was actually the very same week that I went and did my sleep study. And at that point, I knew that I probably did have narcolepsy based on the way that everything was going, you know, talking to the doctor and having the sleep study and everything. And I decided that weekend that, you know, if I was diagnosed, that narcolepsy awareness was going to be my pageant platform, because it was something that I hadn't heard much about. And I knew even then in my heart of hearts that like I could make a difference through pageantry talking about narcolepsy. So I really had made that decision right out of the gate. And I honestly, getting a diagnosis, receiving a diagnosis really brought me a lot of peace. I've been a lot less hard on myself the past couple of years. I always describe it as I had that invisible hand on my shoulder always holding me back. And it's definitely, it's there, but it's loosened its grip a lot. And it's just allowed me to embrace life in a different fashion, which has really meant a lot to me. So getting more into the actual kind of like facts and figures about narcolepsy. So narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. And it affects one in every 2,000 people, about 200,000 Americans and 3 million people worldwide. And there's a number of different symptoms, and persons with narcolepsy all experience them differently. There's excessive daytime sleepiness, which is periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feel comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. There's cataplexy, which is striking sudden episodes of muscle weakness, usually triggered by strong emotions such as laughter, exhilaration, surprise, or anger. And the severity may vary from a slackening of the jaw or buckling of the knees to even falling down. And the duration may be for a few seconds to several minutes, and the person remains fully conscious, even if unable to speak during the episode. There's also hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, and these are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations upon waking up or falling asleep. And these can be very frightening and confusing for individuals. Next one is sleep paralysis. So this is the inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up. And it's often accompanied by the hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. And lastly, there's disrupted nighttime sleep. So unlike public perceptions, people with narcolepsy do not sleep all of the time. More of the timing of sleepiness is more off. So you can be tired during the day, but struggle to fall asleep at night. And there's two types of narcolepsy, the narcolepsy with cataplexy and the narcolepsy without cataplexy, like what I was diagnosed with. I will say for symptoms, I definitely experience the excessive daytime sleepiness, which can kind of result in the brain fog, like I was talking about with the onstage question for the pageant, how it became more difficult for me to articulate an answer in the moment. Disrupted nighttime sleep, I often wake up multiple times during the night, been going on for a very long time. And although I was diagnosed with narcolepsy without cataplexy, it's been kind of an ongoing conversation with my sleep doctor, figuring out if some level of cataplexy might be at bay. I know it manifests with different people in different ways. And how it kind of came up in conversation with the sleep doctor is whenever I am super excessively tired, I get a lot of muscle weakness in my right hand. So I can't grip things. I drop a lot of things. And this is something that's been kind of picking up in pace. So that's the symptoms for diagnosis. Diagnosis typically relies on a 24-hour sleep study that includes a nighttime portion, which is a polysomnogram, and a daytime nap portion, which is a multiple sleep latency test. And the diagnosis is mainly based on how quickly and frequently one's brain enters into rapid eye movement sleep, the REM sleep, during these tests. So for treatment, there's no cure for narcolepsy, but there are a number of different treatments for symptom management. It can often take a really long time for people to find a good way to treat their symptoms. And a couple of the different examples are wake promoters or stimulants for daytime sleepiness, nighttime medications for daytime sleepiness and cataplexy, antidepressants for cataplexy, and scheduled daytime naps, And there's also, a lot of different strategies for coping with narcolepsy. It could be social support through online groups, through social media groups, and hopefully in the near future, again, in-person groups as well. And then there's also, ways people can help manage their symptoms through good sleep hygiene, exercise, nutrition, different things like that that people can do personally. I use a combination of weight promoters. I take naps if I need to. Pictures at the bottom. So I always, here's a good example for like my sleep routine, wear an eye mask at night to block out extraneous light. I find that super helpful, and always sleep with a mouth guard. So it's, different things work for different people, and it's kind of a moving target for people with that. So life with narcolepsy. I have just chosen to be very open with people in both my personal and professional life about having narcolepsy, especially like if I'm having a particularly rough day. It's much easier to just be upfront and honest with people. If I need to pull away for something for a minute, need to lay down for 10 minutes, I just need to like withdraw and regroup and get back into things. I'd much rather be open about that than closed off about it. So one example where just being super open about it really helped was at this Nerd Night event in Miami about a year and a half ago. So Nerd Night is this awesome, awesome thing. They rotate between different museums and talk about all kinds of geeky topics. I've been to a couple of them, so I can't remember what this particular one was that night. But as you can see in this picture, the room was packed. And it really was like the optimal conditions for me, becoming more sleepy much quicker. Very, very full room. Lights were dimmed. It was hot. A couple of the speakers were a little bit more monotone. So that in and of itself was a struggle for me. So not to mention, I'm all the way in the back of the room trying to lean against the wall. I was there with a friend of mine and some other of her friends. And I just happened to kind of get separated from her in between some of her other friends who all happen, of course, to be like a foot or more taller than me. So when I'm trying to like reach around and explain to her that I needed to go sit down because I was having trouble staying awake at the back of the room, it was just difficult to articulate in the moment to try to explain so that her friends like why I was like just leaving them and pushing up front. I was like, okay, I'll be back. I'll talk to you guys later. And I made sure to stick around well after the event to talk to them. Because, they were all kind of like, well, what's up with this girl? Like, why did she just kind of up and leave while we were all like, chatting in the back and enjoying the presentation? And I was able to explain what narcolepsy was, why I needed to kind of like go sit down so that I could fully embrace and enjoy the presentation and be present during it. It really opened up the conversation about it. They had a lot of misperceptions about what narcolepsy was, which can often happen. People just don't really hear about it. It's moments like that where I can educate. It's the reason why I try to be so open about it. It's also because raising awareness is so near and dear to me because there's lower awareness of it, first of all, even among physicians, and there's a lot of misperceptions about what narcolepsy is. So there's an average of between 8 to 15 years between narcolepsy symptom onset and diagnosis. And for me, it's about 25 years or so. I don't really remember a time before symptoms. We just kind of use that fourth grade marker as my official narcolepsy start date, since I don't really have one. And it's estimated that under 50% of people with narcolepsy are currently diagnosed. And the majority of people with narcolepsy are currently underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed, thinking that it might be other things. So common misdiagnoses include epilepsy, depression, and schizophrenia. Depression was a thing that came up a lot, with my meetings with doctors and, confusing my tiredness and sleepiness for being depressed. So, it's been really important to me to raise awareness for this. And that's, why I got involved in this program and gotten so involved with narcolepsy awareness the past couple of years. So with raising awareness, now my focus is really just to live my best life and to help bring awareness to this cause, even helping one person at a time either get to a faster diagnosis or get support for their narcolepsy means the world to me. And, I've kind of wrote this all into like one big thing. I'm working to improve my public speaking and my presentation skills because I know that'll improve being able to raise awareness for narcolepsy more effectively. And then I keep this all in the bigger picture of pageantry as well to tie this all in together because it also provides a platform to be able to speak about narcolepsy awareness. So this is in fact my pageant platform. And I will say that having a crown and sash on is a great conversation starter. So that really naturally brings up the conversation about narcolepsy. And I've been able to speak to it to a number of different pageant systems, which has been wonderful. So, you know, today and to the future, I love working with organizations like Project Sleep and Narcolepsy Network. Most recently, helped promote World Narcolepsy Day. And even through this simple act, you know, being able to help people who are either trying to advocate for themselves and figure out what's going on with them, or they're on a path to diagnosis, they have been diagnosed, helping people in any step of that journey really means a lot. And even just the simple act of posting on Instagram about World Narcolepsy Day, I had someone reach out from a different country who, you know, wasn't sure who to reach out to locally about how to get resources and who to talk to and how to get roped into this bigger narcolepsy community. And that just meant the world to me to even be able to make that one connection. That's really, you know, what it's all about. So I want to thank everyone so much for letting me share my story. And I just have one more parting thought. I just want to reiterate for everyone that sleepiness is invisible. Narcolepsy is invisible. It shows up differently for every person. Everyone has different experiences with it. I think that, you know, oftentimes it can confuse people because they're like, oh, well, you're so active and you're doing all these things. Doesn't mean I'm not sleepy. I just, you know, channel my strengths and energy for different things at different times. And kind of how we all live our life and channel our energies is different for everyone with narcolepsy. But I just, that the fact that it's invisible is kind of my parting thought.
Hey, Kristen. Great job. Thank you for sharing your story tonight. It's been wonderful to see people really admiring how open you are about your narcolepsy. And that just warms my heart so much because I really believe in mirroring each other's behavior. So if someone can see you be open, that means that other people that are watching can draw strength from you. So I just think that that's what I'm already seeing on the comments over here. And just so grateful for all of your involvement.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
A very specific question is, how did you figure out about the night guard? How did you figure that out?
No, okay, so this is kind of funny. Well, funny but not funny. I was just grinding the heck out of my teeth anyway. So my dentist recommended it. And then I got the mouth guard. I got some immediate relief. I mean, I was just gnawing so tight, grinding in my sleep. And, you know, after I went back to the dentist after getting diagnosed, my dentist was like, oh, it totally makes sense. And I'm like, what? He was talking about some study that he read that, you know, persons with narcolepsy can sometimes have like more grinding issues, you know, just due to the different like sleep cycles and everything. And he said he highly recommended that I just always keep up with the mouth guard. And it definitely, man, it makes a world of difference for me.
Very inspiring. It's always good to hear about different things, you know, that might not be on people's radar like that. So.
Oh yeah. And it's like, I didn't, you know, you wake up, you don't think about it, but the dentist is like, you really need to do this. You're not going to have teeth left when you're an old woman. I'm like, oh, right.
Our pageant queen should keep her teeth, I think. Okay, so then someone wants to know, how do you, someone that's in high school and having a little bit of challenge opening up maybe, was interested in just understanding how
did you decide to be so open? Or any tips for sharing maybe?
Yeah, I think it was also like, it was such a relief for me to be diagnosed. It was such a relief. It wasn't going so long of my life feeling like something was going on with me, something was wrong, that there was this bigger thing that like we couldn't put like nail down and put my finger on it. Knowing what that was and being able to put a name to it and articulate it and start talking about it, I took so much comfort in. So being able to share that with others and be able to explain things that I never was really able to articulate and explain before, of like why I would struggle so much in the afternoons before. I didn't understand that. I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand disrupted nighttime sleep and excessive daytime sleepiness. And the more I learned about narcolepsy, the better I could articulate why I felt the way I did at certain times. So to me, being able to express this openly, like even, I just switched bosses very recently, but you know, my former boss, like if I was having a particularly rough day with it, I just throw it out there. It's like, you know what, I gotta do myself for a couple minutes here. And I will jump back into work, even if it means that I'm working late tonight. Like sometimes I just needed to take a break for myself. And I knew that I can do more and offer more for an organization if I'm fresh. So if I'm just like struggling, you know, it's not helping anyone out. So that's why I've just chosen to be really open about it. And I think half of it is, it took me so long on that path to get to where I am now, that's why I'm just like, shout it from the rooftops.
I understand that.
But everyone's in different points in their journey, and I understand that. So it's, even if it's like in little pockets, I guess, just saying.
And being in high school, my God, I would never want to go back to high school. I'm sorry for those that are in high school. I feel that being normal, you know, is like the thing in high school, like you want to fit in. But I do think as you get older, you find that more people do appreciate uniqueness and that we each have something different to bring to the table. So I do think that as we get older, there'll be more people, you know, for this high schooler that's asking, there'll be more people that might, you know, be interested over time. That's just a little bit of my impression.
Yeah. And I will say to anyone who is in high school listening, normal is not a real thing. You'll understand that later on through life, but it is, it's just, you know, you got to chart your own path and get comfortable in your own skin. It's something that doesn't happen overnight. It's definitely an evolving journey for anyone at any age and any stage of life. You know, I can't say how I would have felt if I got diagnosed, you know, much younger, but I think kind of where I'm at in life, it's definitely a little bit easier for me to just throw it out there. Especially because I just have this burning desire now for other people not to go through that constantly feeling like I have to advocate for myself constantly with different doctors and just hitting that roadblock of a diagnosis for years on end.
I love that. So maybe it's even thinking about other people rather than even just sharing because it's about you, but you're sharing because maybe that might resonate with someone else. All right, we have a question from Iris. Do you feel narcolepsy has affected or could possibly affect your romantic relationships in any way?
It's interesting. I was actually, now I'm trying to think. I was already, oh my God. Once again, timeline, I don't have it. I was already married when I got diagnosed. And I think it was great having that built-in support system, you know, going through like, it was a little bizarre at first, like, you know, going through all these different doctors, and it was like a known thing that I was more tired and I had some of these cognitive issues, and my husband's very supportive of it and me going and getting answers. But going from having no answers to going to one appointment and being like, oh, you might have a sleep condition, you need to go to a sleep doctor. Everything kind of got jammed into 4 months, and then I had a diagnosis. We were both kind of like, whoa, you know, like, what does this mean in the whole scope of things? And had to kind of like reevaluate how I can live a better life and spend my energy in different ways. So that kind of reshaped the way we kind of even like handle things around our house and things like that. So it's, I think just thinking about like where you can best utilize your energies and where that fits in with the other person and having open conversations about it is really important. Yeah, that's openness is the key. I guess this is what I keep on coming back to.
Okay, so Amelia would like to know, what is one goal that you have set and accomplished that you didn't think was possible with narcolepsy?
So that's an interesting question, because I never think about things in those terms. So I think of narcolepsy as just like part of who I am, and I don't put limitations on myself within the broader scheme of things. Like, I know when I set goals, like, yeah, maybe I have to give myself a little bit more built-in time for things, but I just think about things in that framework. So I guess one thing that kind of fits in with this, actually speaking at the Narcolepsy Network event, never in a million years would I have thought I'd speak at a conference. That wasn't even remotely top of mind, scared the heck out of me. But like, I put my mind to it, practiced a lot, went out and did it. Felt a lot more confident because I had just gone through the Rising Voices in Narcolepsy program just before then. And I just really put my mind to it. And I made sure actually that day of, I didn't overload myself with going to a ton of sessions right before, gave myself enough time to be able to be fresh to go in and talk and not feel burnt out before I even got in there. So yeah, I don't feel like there's anything I can't accomplish. It's just kind of, I have to see where it fits into my life. I think I'm one of those people who wants to do everything always. So my biggest challenge in life is saying no to things, actually. So easy for me to tack on more. So it's a constant battle to just say, nope, and kind of give myself some breathing room. Yeah, actually, that is my number one challenge with all of this, is just saying no to stuff.
Because I think that I'm personally, knowing you through what we've worked on, you're a pretty determined person, you know? So, you know, I just have to tell a little quick story about, you guys might know how World Narcolepsy Day, the logo for World Narcolepsy Day is a hot air balloon, you know, because of raising awareness or rising, you know, in the air. And so, Kristen, do you want to share a thought that you had when you we were preparing for World Narcolepsy Day this year?
This is why I'm laughing. I was trying to get my hands on a hot air balloon to celebrate.
A real hot air balloon, a real one.
And I just like, oh, this is going to be perfect for social media. This is going to make a big splash. We're going to get this done. I talked to some people, like local airports, was really trying to make this happen. And then that guy turned down, and then the backup plan was a blimp. But that also was not able to happen because of all of the stuff with COVID. They were no longer allowing nonprofit organizations to like get time on the blimp. So yeah, I'm going to make this work eventually, Julie. I will get a hot air balloon or a blimp. But yeah, it's like I have all these big ideas all the time. I'm just one of those people, and that, you know, fuels me. But I also have to listen to my body and not overload myself constantly, which is the bigger struggle in life.
Too many blimp projects, but just a few. It's so amazing. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, Mark, he asks, have you ever fallen asleep right in the middle of a sentence?
Not that I remember. I get more just that brain fog just settles in hard. It's more, I get to where it's like, I know what I want to say and I cannot find the words for the life of me to be able to spit it out. Or I'll say something kind of along the lines of what I was trying to say and I'm like, what just came out of my mouth? Like, I feel like that's how it kind of manifests when I'm around people more often than not, when I'm overtired. But yeah, I mean, I don't often just fall asleep. I'm not much of a napper, unfortunately. Sometimes I wish I was. I struggle, I'd say, like, not necessarily falling asleep, but once I wake up, getting back to sleep. And then I'd say I'm kind of on this weird perpetual pattern of every 5 or 6 weeks I have like insomnia issues where like multiple nights in a row, I'm up for 3, 4, or 5 hours at night. And then that definitely spirals. So then I'm super tired the next day. And the more tired I am, actually, the harder it is for me to get to bed. So it turns into this whole messed up trap of a couple days in a row where I'm just kind of toast. Still have been trying to pinpoint what triggers that. Journal on it, keep notes on it. Still something I'm trying to figure out.
Well, thank you for sharing that. So we have another question from Iris, which kind of dovetails with the question I was going to ask you, which is how do your colleagues in the beauty pageant world react And did you have any other major difficulties? I don't know exactly what she means by that, but maybe difficulties with the pageant. And I was also wondering just, yeah, what are people's reactions to hearing about your platform with narcolepsy?
I mean, oftentimes there aren't a lot of people that I've met. So there are some other people that have narcolepsy or different sleep conditions as their pageant platform, but not in a large way. You know, it's not one of the more common ones, I guess. So that's usually very interesting to people. They're like, oh, like, tell me more. What is this? Like, is this something you have? What's the deal? And people want to launch right into a conversation about it, which I find to be particularly helpful. And then in terms of actually competing, I think now I'm just much more cognizant of giving myself a little bit more time and space. I used to love like even like pairing up with a roommate, you know, split a hotel room for a pageant. Now it's like, no, I need my own room. I need to make sure that I sleep and I'm not like up gabbing it late at night, you know, hanging out with my pageant sisters. Like I have to be very deliberate about how I spend my time so that I can get the full experience out of the weekend. Yeah, I have to kind of like purposely hold myself back a little bit so that I can manage my time effectively and manage my energy. I think that's the biggest thing for me. It's always about energy management.
That just kind of goes into exactly what Jill was asking next, which is, do you set a schedule and have more quality versus quantity in relationships?
Interesting. I'd say I'm a big, every single thing in my life is in a calendar. My entire life is a Google calendar. I'm big into time blocking. I'm one of those people, like you might not hear from me for 2 hours because I'm working on a project. I won't check emails. I refuse to during a certain time period. I really try to concentrate and put my energy into the things that I'm working on at a given time. And this is both in my personal and professional life. I feel like that way I can build in breaks when I need to, give myself more breathing room and things. And I feel like embracing that has really helped me in a big way. Sometimes I do have to adjust on a day-to-day basis if I'm, you know, having a rough day. I'd say that it's funny with the whole like spending time with people thing. I thought it was just because I was a blend of introvert and extrovert. Like any of those personality tests you take, I'm always exactly 50-50 introvert, extrovert. So I'm like, all right, whatever. The introvert side of me just needs more time by myself to recharge and get back in front of people. I'm also realizing, you know, with a narcolepsy diagnosis, I just need more time to recharge. So, you know, I try to be social to the best of my ability, but like even this weekend, I just chose to stay in all weekend. I got stuff done around the house. I've been reading and I felt like I needed that as a reset. Had a lot going on with the holidays, a lot going on for New Year's and, you know, just seeing people all the time, I love, but I also find it particularly draining. So I have to build in these little pockets of time to make sure that I kind of rest up and recharge.
Totally agree. Well, I think I'm maybe a little bit more introverted myself, but yeah, it's so important. I think also it's just hard to, some like that unpredictability. I don't know if you feel that way, but sometimes the unpredictability of like how I'm going to feel makes me a little bit hesitant to make plans because you don't know when it's going to sort of hit. I don't know if you've felt that way or if you, I mean, sometimes I schedule myself as if I don't have narcolepsy at all. And then I'm somehow still shocked that like, you know, every afternoon I get tired. I'm like, as if I shouldn't know this yet.
Yep, I know that. It's like, what is going on? Oh, right. Oh yeah, there's this thing.
Oh, I just wanted to say, I think your pageant community has really showed up too for some of your, for the sleep in and stuff. So how did you get them involved in like, participating like and taking pictures for the sleep in and World Narcolepsy Day?
It was just them seeing what I was posting. That's the thing. It's like, you know, doing the simple things, like even just like sharing on social, you don't know who's going to see it and you don't know the impact that you're making. So there's two women I know in pageantry through different systems. One, her mother had narcolepsy and that's how she's gotten more involved. And then I can't remember the other woman's connection, but you know, there's something personal in their lives too, that kind of bring it all together. So that's been really nice. And I think I've seen more and more women in pageantry getting more involved in different sleep conditions. So I think that's super exciting.
You're amazing. Thank you for everything you do and just giving so much back because you give a lot back to this community and really, really grateful. to know you, to call you my long distance friend, although we live very close to each other in New Hampshire at one point. So I kind of think of you as my New Hampshire friend, but you know, you're Florida, I'm California girl now, so.
Yeah, so this is, for anyone listening, Julie and I lived about 10 minutes apart, but at different points of time in our life, so it's kind of funny.
Small town New Hampshire world, so. Okay, well, thank you guys so much, and thank you again, Kristen, and bye for now.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.